Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadget 360 podcast. This is episode number 81 and today we are going to be talking about iOS 11. Now, this is being recorded on 19th September and a few hours from the recording, the official launch of iOS 11 is going to happen. That's at 10:30 p.m. India time and we are recording about maybe 8 hours before that. So to talk about iOS 11 and all the exciting new features and what we like the most about it, we have our games editor, Rishi Albani.
Greetings.
And we have a friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
Hello.
Mikhail is also present, a regular feature in our gaming podcast, which is called Transition. You can check that out too. So I'm your host, Pranay Parab. And first of all, in iOS 11, there are like, it's not a minor version update, is it? Like there's like so many major things changing here. And the most important and most prominent of these is probably the App Store, right?
Yeah, so what Apple announced, I think, a couple of months prior when they showed off iOS 11 during their WWDC conference, which is for developers, was that the App Store gets a massive rehaul. So rather than just show you a boatload of apps, which essentially look... which basically made discoverability like trying to find a needle in a haystack. They decided to take a more focused approach, a more approach that's kind of similar to how magazines used to operate and how newspapers still operate, where there's a focus on just a few apps and a very well-curated experience. And that's one of the major differences this time around. Plus, there's less focus on the charts. So previously, what used to happen, you'd go into the featured section, you'd easily find your way across top paid, top grossing, top free apps. And that helped people make decisions on what to pick up. But at the same time, that also allowed certain not so ethical developers to game the system by, well, you know, using botnets to pump up their download numbers. So people see a popular app, assume it's popular when it's actually not, and download it. So there's less focus on the charts this time around. There's a greater focus on a new app, a new game, and in-depth interviews, features, tips and tricks with developers as well. So in a way, it's essentially trying to be all things to all. I mean, it's trying to be a few things to a lot of people, which I think is really cool, where it's a more focused approach. And rather than become a soup, it's like they decided to turn it from the supermarket of app stores to essentially a more focused focused user experience similar to how Apple stores are in real life, which I think is really, really cool. So yeah, that's one of the biggest updates.
Okay, Mike, what are your thoughts on the App Store?
So I'm really happy they gave games a separate section because there are a lot of people who use the App Store only for games and there are a lot of people who don't care about games aside from one or two time wasters. They have their own sections now. And the focus on top paid, top free, top grossing it's no longer the focus anymore. Like you have to scroll down to see these lists and all that, which is, it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the sales of and downloads of certain free apps, because most people just go to the App Store and look at a few of the tabs on the bottom of the screen and then decide what to download.
Yeah.
The Today section, which is where they'll have their curation and interviews and tips and tricks, is going to be very interesting. Because as of now, people who are on the GM build, which is the gold master for iOS 11 in India, are seeing features of games which usually don't sell that well in India. Like you have point-and-click adventure games like for 800 rupees, like Thimbleweed Park, which is the game of the day. Yeah. Now, it did really well when it launched on other platforms abroad, but this is not something which would do really well in India on the App Store. It's a great game. It's a great port as well. But yeah, like not many people over here want to buy an 800 rupee point-and-click adventure. The same thing happened with Rishi Notice Guild of Dungeoneering, yeah, which is a dungeon crawler RPG with very unique graphics. These are things which don't really do well in India, but because these RPGs and all are popular abroad and they do well on the App Store there, we are seeing them featured. So until Apple actually gets someone to curate the Indian section, it's not going to be very relevant for the public over here. Like you're just going to see a lot of good premium games and good quality content, but I don't know how relevant that's going to be for India and developers over here.
What's interesting though is it'll be fun to see how Apple evolves this going forward, because it's a known fact, right? A lot of apps have massive user acquisition budgets. I mean, the bigger publishers, be it guys like EA, be it guys like Activision, be it guys like King, they have massive user acquisition budgets. For those of you who don't know, user acquisition means the process by which publishers find a way to make you download their app and play it. There's a cost attached to it that's usually known as user acquisition. Now, the bigger apps, guys like Candy Crush and all, I mean, they have their sort of virality, which gets your friends to make you download it. So Apple's aware of that. They're aware that certain publishers already have that budget in place. And how whether they decide to give them that extra feature or not will be fun to see. Because to me, the way the App Store is geared now is great for bringing up indies, is great for bringing up those developers who aren't as well off as others. To me, it seems like to be that great leveler to ensure that the playing field and distribution of downloads across devices, across the user base, is kind of normalized, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, so let's see how this pans out in the future. But at least from an idea perspective, this is a great idea. Overall, the improvements they've made to the App Store and the way they highlight apps and all now is pretty good. I mean, if you compare it to other stores, for example, if you look at stuff like Google Play, Steam, yeah. I can't think of an App Store that is, you know, as good and as nicely personalized as this one is now.
Though what would be really cool, and I think this is something which hopefully they try adding in the future, is probably some form of customization and notification. So if there's a specific long form piece, or if there's a tips and tricks piece related to a game I'm playing, I'd like a notification about that so I know when to visit the store.
Yeah, and something which they'll never do, which is if there's a sale, just send me a notification saying, you know, your favorite game is on sale.
No, Apple only likes removing apps that do this. They don't yeah. want to actually help you know when games you want, because this is something I noticed even on like the PlayStation Store, because they added a wish list recently. But unlike Steam, they don't message you when stuff you want is on sale. The interesting thing about what you mentioned about curation and all is Google Play is pretty terrible about this stuff. They usually never feature any good games. Every time I look at it, it probably takes me about 7-8 taps before I get to see a list of decent games, just because how it works. So it's going to be interesting seeing how they respond, because the apps and games that get featured by Apple, and when Apple interviews them, they are definitely going to see a huge surge compared to
yep.
Google Play. And anyway, revenue is more on the App Store than it is on Google Play.
Especially now with the new redesign.
Yeah, yeah. So doing an interview and stuff like that, I have a feeling we're going to see more games and apps launch first on iOS like they already do than they do on Google.
I think also a lot of it has to do with the divergent approaches to app stores. If you look at how Google essentially is, it's algorithms, bots, and numbers at the end of the day. And fine, I'll say one thing for sure though, at least the Play Store has more local relevance. Now, whether that local relevance is quality content or not, that's another debate for another time. But I have a feeling, just like we saw Google announce AR Core, we might just see them revamp the App Store just to stay competitive. Because at the end of the day, let's be honest here, the biggest advantage right now, especially in this situation where every App Store has a deluge of apps, where they're just, you're just basically swimming in apps, that human curation is going to be the big differentiator. And it's nice to see someone take a lead on that. And I have a feeling it's because it's Apple who's taken the lead. It's just a matter of time before others feature something similar. I mean, Sony's already doing it. Where they have game developers themselves talk about their favorite games on PlayStation Network, which is really cool. And Microsoft, well, Microsoft has, I mean, could be doing something better on that front too. But since Apple's taken the lead, I mean, yeah, it's just a matter of time before everyone else follows.
Yeah, true. So since we're speaking about App Store and this design so much, I think it's important to bring to everyone's attention that design changes in iOS 11 are actually quite significant. So they sowed the seeds for this last year when the Apple Music revamp was announced with iOS 10.
Yeah.
They chose bold fonts, and they chose the same San Francisco font in a much thicker weight for all their titles, such as For You, Browse, Playlists, and all that. So now we are seeing that move across iOS. So if you go to apps such as Messages or even your files, you see like all these new design elements showing up. So I, for one, like I really like the way the direction in which they're going in. But then, you know, Mikhail is our design expert. So why don't you like talk us through what has changed?
So when Apple Music got the revamp, that's pretty much what everyone expected, because when 9to5Mac and other sites reported on how the new iPhone was going to be with like a full glass display, no buttons and all that. And it's interesting to see how it's made its way into the App Store, into the iTunes Store and Messages. Because if you notice now, it's a little more, I'd say, bouncy. It's dynamic. When you scroll, elements move, recede into the background. It's kind of like what Johnny Ive used to say in the first place, like let the UI recede into the background as you work and stuff. But what I don't like, and what I think will probably take me a while to get used to, is how they've changed the bottom tab bar on every app. Earlier, we've gone from having icons with text underneath it, which is very recognizable from iOS 1 to iOS 6. Then we moved to iOS 7, which had the whole thin icons, which ended up being a bad design decision. Now we have icons with text next to them, which makes the touch targets much larger. But it also is a little confusing for people who've been using iOS devices and any devices. Like on Android, we already have too much confusion with, like, you can swipe from the left to get the contextual menu, or you have tabs. So there's no consistency over there. But it's going to be interesting seeing how almost all the big third-party apps and almost all the big apps like Snapchat, Facebook and all adapt to this. Because some of them, like at least Facebook, has a ton of stuff on the bottom bar. That's not going to fit now if you have an icon and text on the side of it. So I'm interested to see how they adapt to this, because like font changes and all are fine. People get used to that. But this is, I'd say, almost as big a change as removing slide to unlock.
And then, I mean, and further down the line, if we assume that next year's iPhones across the board remove the home button, we're going to see widespread adoption of gestures. And how the bigger apps and the apps most people use adapt to that will also be a point of concern. And what's really amusing, though, is that gestures have been around since 2009 on the Palm Pre, and we're just seeing a lot of, it's not just iOS, right? Even Android is looking to incorporate in some fashion. And how developers react to that, what we see going forward, will also be fun to see.
I mean, like on Android, even whenever I've used an Android device, I install Nova Launcher, and they have a ton of gestures in Nova Launcher Pro, and I always use that stuff because in a lot of cases, like at least on the earlier Nexus phones, the power button always fails at some point. So you have to get used to using gestures.
Yes.
So I'm not a fan of how Apple's done it on the iPhone X so far, because
10.
You have iPhone 10. So what you have now is people who are probably going to buy an iPhone 8 or 8 Plus this year and probably not wait out for the 10. Next year, they're probably going to be forced into getting a phone without a home button, and the gestures are completely different over there compared to what they are now. So I think if they wanted to get people used to this, they should have put the same gestures across the board as far as possible. Because you shouldn't have swipe from down means one thing on one iPhone, and the next year it means something else.
Yeah, the inconsistency is glaring. And I have a feeling it's something they're aware of. But if we also look at their hardware cycle, right? And if you also notice that a few analysts have even said the 10 is going to be in short supply all the way up to 2018. So I have a feeling that once those production processes are in place, once they have that normalized, we'll probably see a situation where design is also normalized across the board. So yeah, for those of you OCD folks in the crowd, much like our host Pranay, expect consistency to be a thing in 2018.
Yes, I don't think it will be, addressed anytime soon, simply because now you notice that first with 3D Touch, right? There are phones with 3D Touch, and then there are phones which don't have 3D Touch. And even the iPad doesn't have 3D Touch. But then if you go to the control center, I mean, at least back in iOS 10, you needed to use 3D Touch to enable certain features. Like if you wanted a higher intensity flashlight, you would have to use 3D Touch. So that wouldn't work on the control center on without 3D Touch at all. So now you can do it, yeah? They fixed it finally so that you don't need 3D Touch. You can use it with a long press. But then, you know, at least until the next version of iOS comes along, these inconsistencies in gestures and all, I don't think they're going to go away.
I think what's interesting is what I've seen is in apps like Telegram, Messenger, and even Instagram to some extent, what they did is they backported the 3D Touch stuff to non-3D Touch devices where you can tap and hold. Like in Telegram, you can tap and hold a conversation. Instagram, if you're looking at a thumbnail view, you can just tap and hold and it gives you the 3D Touch effect. We're seeing Apple do that now with Control Center, where you can tap and hold like you would through 3D Touch, except it actually gives you more options in Control Center. So I don't think they're going to do away with 3D Touch, because a lot of people use it quite often and it's really nice how they've implemented it. But they're going to need to figure out something for the iPad, because there are a lot of people who have an iPhone and an iPad, and you get people used to something on one device, it should be there on the other device.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of their unified UI and stuff like that.
I think a lot of this will also be dependent on what developers figure out are the most popular devices. And let's be honest, because there's a cost attached to each UI change, right? There's a cost attached to each app update. So I think it's going to be a situation where they're going to cater to the most popular devices, or unless it's a strategic situation, you know, where Apple will allow them being featured on, or if they cater to, let's say, iPhone 10 specific functionality, then we might see something similar to how 3D Touch was reverse engineered, right? Brought back in its, you know, tap and hold fashion. So we might see something similar to gestures too. So it's going to be fun to see how the developers react to all of this and how Apple manages that expectation as well. Because, let's be honest, when the 10 is out, it's going to sell out.
Yeah, there's going to be short supplies. It's nothing new. Every iPhone sells out and it's difficult to get for the first few months. But the other interesting thing about the design is how, like Pranay mentioned, the bold fonts and all that used on non-iPhone 10 devices, which is basically everything available today. The top of the screen has a lot of white space now. It looks a little empty. Now, you make room for the notch on the 10, that's fine, but they basically were lazy about it on the other devices. I mean, I know you want people to get used to seeing stuff over here because their next phone in the next 1 or 2 years is going to be like that, but come on, like, you already have different builds for each iPhone. Why would you waste so much space on the top? I just don't get it.
I think more than the waste of the space, what really bums me out is the fact that we're finally losing the dots in focus and we're getting bars instead for signal strength.
I don't really like that change much. But I suppose, you know, that's the kind of thing that people just forget about. I really like the dot design.
Yeah, it seemed futuristic. It seemed cool, but oh well. I mean, and the other minor gripes, like for those of you who are quite OCD about Wi-Fi, when you switch off Wi-Fi from Control Center, it disconnects you from Wi-Fi. It doesn't switch off Wi-Fi. Which means, so if you have your prompts on, you'll probably get a prompt saying that in a few minutes, you'll probably get a prompt saying, do you want to join another Wi-Fi network?
Yeah, so if you hit the airplane mode icon there, then it'll show you that your Wi-Fi is disconnected. And how you can tell the difference is that if you tap the Wi-Fi icon there, it just changes from blue and white to whatever gray and whatever color is there. That means the Wi-Fi is not disconnected. You just like unjoined the current network.
Yeah.
But if it shows you like a strike through, on the Wi-Fi icon, that means it's disconnected.
So there is no way to do this on 3D Touch. You need to go to the settings to disable
it. Exactly.
Yeah. So they give us one thing and they take one thing away. And when I say that, I mean their iOS 11 will finally allow us to toggle cellular data directly from Control Center.
Yeah.
But then how soon before it lets us talk to Siri and make that happen?
So
speaking of which...
Yes.
Yeah, so. No. So before we head to Siri... Control Center letting us toggle cellular data is a very big deal, given how bad probably all networks are in many areas in the country, where you probably know this already, but if you have a low signal, your phone keeps switching between different towers and that uses more Wi-Fi while it tries to retain its 4G or 3G connection. Allowing people to turn off cellular in poor network areas when they have Wi-Fi is going to conserve a lot of battery.
I mean, yeah, it's a welcome failsafe. But it also shows that out at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do with networks, right? So
yeah, that's true. So one thing we haven't spoken about at all is the fact that we can actually customize Control Center right now. So you can't maybe disable things like if you don't want mobile data and Wi-Fi over there, you can't remove all of those. Those things are going to be there. But there are other things like if you don't want the torch, the calculator, you can get rid of all of that. And there is a new really cool feature which you can go to and enable via settings. Go to settings, control center, and then customize controls. So you can enable screen recording from there. Now there's only one way to switch it on, which is enable it in control center and then nicely tap that icon which shows up there and you'll start recording your own screen. So previously to do this on an iOS device, you had to connect it to a Mac and enable QuickTime Player and go through all sorts of hoops to get the recording out. But now you can do it directly on your iOS device. It's saved in your library. And then you can forward it to whoever you want to.
This is going to be very useful for people who play a lot of games and people who just want to share how apps work. Like suppose you get a message from a parent or some relative or someone who needs advice saying that, how do I send people group images on WhatsApp or some nonsense like that? You can actually do it and have a recording and send it to them now, which would save everyone a lot of time. And Apple, I'm very happy to see Apple actually do the screen recording and also enable streaming, because live streaming from mobile devices is going to be a very big deal. It already is, but it's going to really become a big deal in the next few years.
Yeah, I wish this feature was there when all of us were addicted to Pokemon Go. You know, you could just go outside and start streaming it wherever. It would have really helped us a lot.
Obligatory Android had it first remark for those in the audience who are obviously waiting for it.
Well,
so there you go.
It had apps. It didn't have the feature baked into the OS. There's a difference.
Just saying, it's there. It's been there. So, okay. You know, I mean, we won't make any kidney jokes because it's not hardware related. So.
Yeah, but then the fact that you can live broadcast something that's being recorded via iOS is a huge deal because there's such a big gaming crowd out there who, and a lot of them play a lot of mobile games and stream.
Yeah.
So, you know, even things like Minecraft Pocket Edition,
which is going to become Minecraft now soon.
Yeah.
They're going to change Minecraft Pocket Edition, Minecraft Xbox One Edition, Minecraft Windows 10 Edition and Minecraft Nintendo Switch Edition to just be called Minecraft because that's the new platform going forward. So yeah, this is going to be a really big deal because now it can be done from the OS directly on iOS devices.
Yeah, so speaking of like major changes to the way iOS 11 is going to work, there's one app which we haven't spoken about so far. It's sort of the elephant in the room. It's Files.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, I thought that this is going to be some kind of a revolutionary change where, like, you know, suddenly you have this file manager app and you can, like, put in folders and, like, store your local files and all of that.
So, but, like Android.
Or Windows, which had it before.
Oh, yes.
That.
There we go. Well played. Yeah.
So, I thought it would become, like, more and more like macOS that way. But Files is far from that at the moment. So, what you can do in Files is basically have your iCloud drive storage, your local storage, which will be called on my iPhone or on my iPad, depending on which device you're using, and Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, Box, whatever cloud storage you use, all inside one app.
But though, keep in mind when you go to the location, which is on my iPhone or on my iPad, it'll just show you specific folders, probably related to GarageBand, Pages,
yeah,
numbers.
Yeah, only like certain apps. Yes. It doesn't show you like all folders. So it's not very convenient at the moment. And even like other apps like Google Drive, Dropbox, whatever, you can't really select multiple files from that and copy it over to your local storage or to iCloud Drive. So it's kind of half-baked right now, the feature. Mm-hmm. But then we should also understand that, okay, this is like version 1.0 of a feature, and with future updates, this will get much better, as we've already seen with iOS 11 and how it deals with the iPad, for example.
And so, I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, I mean, let's be real here, right? While other platforms may have had this feature baked in for a while, a fact of the matter is, it's not going to be... Like, can you imagine the hell that would happen if Apple gave someone, like, let's say your grandmom, complete access to every system file via Files? Can you imagine the drama that would go down if they managed to delete stuff that they shouldn't be deleting?
I think what's interesting is iOS has always had much better productivity apps and much better power user apps that have worked around the OS and worked around limitations and still managed doing good stuff. Like, there's an app called Editorial, which is the best writing and most powerful writing app on any platform, and it's only on iOS for now. You have apps like Drafts, Quick Capture. You have crazy apps.
Ulysses.
Developers are doing... What?
Ulysses.
I thought you said UC Browser.
I said Ulysses. We don't talk about security threats.
Okay, so now those guys, the developers, get access to more stuff with the Files app. So I'm going to be interested to see how they do it, because Android has had file access since the beginning, but we still don't have decent writing apps on the platform. There are barely any good productivity apps over there. Like the most powerful automation app is called Tasker, and it looks like it's on ICS still.
Mm. Yeah, Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah, Android 4.0. Yeah. And what version are we on right now?
8.0, Oreo.
Oreo.
Yeah, so apps still look like that. Meanwhile, workflow came and got bought by Apple. It still works. It's really good. And they worked around all the limitations on the platform. So I'd say, like, it's a known thing that Apple slowly opens up and slowly gives users more features and all stuff which other platforms have had. But the developers and the ecosystem they have is just way better. So we're going to see more of it soon, I'd say.
Yeah, so that's what I expect from the future of iOS, since they've acquired Workflow, I think, earlier this year or maybe late last year. I forget when. But it was fairly recent, like too recent for it to be a big feature of iOS 11. But I would assume that a lot of those features that Workflow brought in, which would allow you to do things that were quite hard to do on iOS 10, you can actually do them much faster. So I would expect these features to be integrated into iOS in future versions.
And also, they always give a teaser of what they're going to do in the next thing. Like, we had Siri getting introduced at some point. now devs have access to Siri. You can tell people, you can send messages via other apps using Siri now. Control center customization is finally a thing. I wouldn't be surprised if iOS 12 adds third-party options in control center for
exactly.
a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
They always do this. Like, this is stuff which Android has had since, what, 2.0? Like, the notification pull-down which allows you to do all this quick controls and all. It's always stuff which they copy and they try and do it better in a lot of cases. So iOS 12 most definitely will have a control center allowing you to do this. I mean, Siri is finally going to be useful for people in India because a lot of people have trouble with voice recognition.
Yes.
Despite the fact that Apple introduced English India as an option, we now have Type to use Siri,
yes.
which is something which I cannot believe took so long to get into the OS.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, it's still very much work in progress though. And while it does work, I mean, if I compare it to Google Assistant's type feature, it's, I mean, it's not there yet. It's getting there. But then also you have to keep in mind a lot of it has to do with the fact that while Google gives you the convenience, well, let's just say if their data policies are as great as they are on Tez, which is kind of a privacy violation at this stage, then it's something to keep in mind.
All right. So I think we've covered a lot of the major features that are there in iOS 11. But something we've not mentioned so far at all is the iPad, right? So Mikhail and me, both of us are like iPad enthusiasts over here.
Yeah.
So
wait, iPad enthusiasts?
Yeah.
So what do you like? Do you guys like overclock your iPad, use like water cooling and cool stuff like that?
And yeah, we do all that. And then we play Dota 2 and complain about Steam prices on the iPad. No, we actually use our iPads for doing real stuff.
Yeah. So there are three major things that have changed for iPad specifically. First is multitasking. Second is the dock. And third is we have drag and drop, which kind of helps you run two apps side by side and drop items from one to the other.
Okay. And also, I'd say the new keyboard is a very big deal.
True that. So the keyboard, what has changed is basically, this is an iPad exclusive feature where you start seeing symbols on top of each character. So for example, the number 1, 2, 3 will show up above, say, the top row on the iPad. So Q, above Q, there's 1. So all you have to do is swipe down with the letter Q, and you can type in 1. So each symbol that's there above a character, all you have to do is swipe down on that character and that symbol will be entered. So this means that you don't have to spend time switching between the symbol keyboard and the character keyboard or the number keyboard to like enter like entire strings of URLs, for example.
This is very interesting because there's an app which still exists called Textastic Code Editor, and it's at version 6 right now. When this released on iOS, it had a keyboard which was very similar to this, except it was a little more detailed where you had 4 options for swiping, 4 directions for swiping. And this was very useful for coding because you use a lot of symbols over there, and switching keyboards and switching between different rows is a pain. So it's good to see Apple implement this because people will slowly get used to this. And I hope it eventually comes to, I don't know how it'll work on the iPhone 7 and the smaller size one, but I think this could work on the bigger iPhone.
Yeah, it could work on the 7 Plus or the 8 Plus, but I don't see it working on the smaller iPhone. As it is, the keys are so cramped on that.
This is a very good change. They're finally doing something interesting with the keyboard on iPad, aside from having the split keyboard, which I think launched in the beginning with the iPad or probably a year after that.
Yeah, so the split keyboard also works very well now. Like, I've been using it on the iPad Pro 10.5 inch and it is really nicely optimized. The way they've laid out keys and all of that, I quite like it. So, I mean, I've been using that quite a bit myself, but maybe not on iOS 11. Like, I had it before the GM. But once iOS 11 came around and this new keyboard showed up, that made a big difference to the way I use the iPad. All right, so...
But though, question, the 70,000 rupee question though for some of us who are interested in the iPad and looking at it as a replacement for, let's say, a MacBook Air or a standard laptop. I mean, how close are we to that singularity moment where, yes, this can be a laptop replacement? Do the software features actually make that much of a difference now?
I think for a lot of people, it's never going to get there because they need the convenience of using a mouse. And I cannot foresee Apple adding proper mouse support to an iPad ever. Like, they want you to use the touchscreen for it. The keyboard support they've added has been great. Third-party developers are already on board. It's very easy to get used to using an iPad with a keyboard. In fact, the 10.5 keyboard case is a full-size keyboard, so it isn't even cramped like the 9.7 Pro, which was released like 2 years ago or something like that. So we're getting there, but if someone has an open mind, they'll be able to get used to it because you already have photo editing apps which are better than what you have for most people, not for professional photographers. But then those people are never going to consider this as their main, as a replacement. This is meant for the normal people, not the professionals, I'd say. For them, easy. In some cases, apps work better on iPad than they do on traditional computers. Like drawing apps, you can just directly pull out your pencil and start, and you have one of the best displays and the most responsive displays for drawing. And in fact, better than Surface also in that regard.
So. Yeah, so I would say that, like, especially with the iPad Pro, like, it's almost probably more powerful than a MacBook Air in quite a few benchmarks and tests.
I mean, but yeah. We don't really need to talk about benchmarks as well, because most people who would use an iPad as their computer, they don't care about all that stuff.
Yeah, true that. But you still, just, if
the multitasking, drag and drop, yeah. I think, legit steps now getting there. Drag and drop is a big deal because a lot of people do it. The Files app, again, it's an initial release, I'd call it. Hopefully in iOS 12, it becomes something where people are comfortable using it like they are with like Explorer on their computer or like Finder on the Mac. So I'd say we're getting there for the people who aren't computer savvy, where they'll be able to just pick up an iPad. But the bigger problem is, I mean, the barrier of entry is still the cost, right? Like, people don't want to spend like 70 and 80,000 for an iPad Pro to maybe not replace their computer, which they're used to, at 20,000, which will be a netbook or some nonsense. Now, while it is a better device in every aspect, those people won't be comfortable.
I think. And also for pro people, it depends on the use case, right? For example, we are podcasters. So to record a podcast on the iPad, we're still some way away from managing it as well as we manage it on the Mac. Like, you need, I mean, if you look at our setup, there are at least like 7 or 8 different cables, different types of connectors, all of which need to be connected at the same time. And you need to be able to run like multiple apps side by side, not just, you know, be limited to 2 apps running side by side for a proper podcast recording setup. So all of these things are like still quite a ways away from being the reality. But if you're a writer, you can definitely use the iPad as your primary computer. Like, the only thing that's really stopping me from switching to the iPad entirely is the fact that our in-house publishing software does not work on the on iOS browsers. Tried it on Chrome, tried it on Safari, it doesn't work there. But other than that, I can totally switch to, like, if I was just writing, then I can totally switch to the iPad. So that definitely, there's promise here. Now it also depends on developers, third-party developers. So iOS 11 brings in multitasking, which is you can run 2 apps side by side. So you can probably pick up, for example, say YouTube and Notes. So a large part of our job involves like watching different types of videos over there online, and then doing our research based on that, like making notes. And then we probably would have a browser open at the same time as we are opened our favorite writing app. So we do all of these things side by side. So in all of these use cases, it is very useful, because multitasking works like a charm, at least on the iPad Pro 10.5. But there is always this problem that some developers don't implement it as well as the others. So for example, now messages, you can actually select multiple messages, okay? Maybe like tap and drag one out, and then select 4 or 5 text messages, and then drag them into another app, and then send them to somebody or put it in your notes or whatever. But that doesn't work with Tweetbot. Tweetbot, you can't drag a tweet out and drag it to the app next to it, which can be Telegram, which can be messages, whatever. So minor things like that are really annoying. Apps such as Slack don't really have great multitasking support yet. Like, for example, if you click a link on Slack, it opens the Safari browser inside the app itself, right? And then if you resize the window, that browser just goes away. So there are a lot of bugs like that which are annoying at this point, but how, like, it will probably get better with time. But the biggest change for anybody who's using an iPad is the dock. Like, you can now have 13 apps in the dock plus 3 which are Siri suggested. So if you have a keyboard, a Bluetooth keyboard, then you can press Command Option D inside any app and open up the dock right there. And same shortcut to hide it as well. So these kind of minor changes make the iPad more like a Mac. And we are definitely seeing the iPad going in that direction now. And I'm just glad that Apple is investing all this all time and energy inside into making iOS 11 and future versions of iOS much better for the iPad. Because I really see that, you know, I really love that device, and I really like the attention that Apple has been paying to it.
I think it's very interesting to see them push iOS 11 in this direction, because the iPhone makes a lot more money for them and is a much more widely used device. To see iOS 11 not bring so much difference to the iPhone, except for a few UI changes, control center and stuff like that, these aren't breakout features, I'd say, like for a numbered OS. They could have put this as 10.3 or something like that. They already had 10.3, but it's like a point release. The iPad got like a legit big version. So maybe it shows their commitment, because we've seen lots of stuff come to the iPad, like the 10.5 as the 120 hertz display.
Yeah.
Lots of new stuff coming to it. So maybe it is doing something for them. So
yeah, probably. But the only way in which this kind of a device can become more popular is if you cater to the enthusiast crowd and make them really like appreciate the features that are there. That's when it'll like trickle down to the mass market, because people will see that it's really useful. At least, you know, like somehow Apple has managed to do it for both people, like those who are buying the cheaper 2017 iPad and the iPad mini 4, and those who are buying the iPad Pro as well. All right, so why don't you guys tell me what your favorite feature of iOS 11 so far has been? Mikhail, do you want to go first?
Yeah, just I'd say the dock or drag and drop on the iPad. The dock mainly, because it feels almost useless how the dock currently is on iOS 10 compared to how it is in iOS 11, where it actually allows for better multitasking. And
yeah,
given I use the iPad quite a bit outside the house, yeah, excited to see how it is. Not a fan of the new tab bar still. I don't know how long it'll take me to get used to that, but yeah, the dock definitely on the iPad.
All right, Rishi?
I'd have to go with screen recording and broadcasting.
You'd pick that. Yeah, games editor.
Game changers, in my opinion, pun unintended. I'm still grudging them on the fact that I have to go into settings to switch off Wi-Fi completely, and still grudging the fact that the network indicator or bars, which is like, what, 1980s? Why Johnny Ive? But that aside, I mean, it's a pretty solid release, and I would have to agree with Mike. By and large, it seems like a point release for iPhone, but then I haven't had much time to check it out on iPad, unlike you two very posh people I'm in company with. Yeah, but that aside, I mean, it seems like a pretty solid release. I like the fact that they can let me customize the control center to some degree.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
which,
a real.
I mean, to me, I can see a lot of potential in this, especially if you're someone who scans a lot. I mean, I can't wait for the moment they let me scan using third-party apps. Sure, Apple lets you have their own scanner, but I prefer using certain other third-party apps. But yeah, I mean, to me, it has to be gaming followed by basically live streaming and recording followed by the control center customizations.
Yeah, so I'm going to pick some not so well-known features maybe, because like the headline features are all there, obviously, and they're all pretty good. Like overall, I'm very pleased with the way iOS 11 has turned out. But my favorite feature so far has to be this one thing called Prevent Cross-Site Tracking in Safari. So what Safari does now is that if you ever notice, like if you go online and you visit one site and you probably like look at some kind of a product, then the ad for that product follows you across the internet. So Safari now intelligently deletes these cookies and stops that from happening, which means that, you know, all these invasive ad tracking cookies and all, they won't be having the same effect. I guess it's only a matter of time before like these advertisers find a workaround to that, but I'm so glad that Apple is taking this initiative.
I don't know if advertisers will be able to find a workaround, because Apple's going in the opposite direction of Google when it comes to ads, where they want to block everything, and they are giving like users the power to block ads because they have inbuilt ad blocking, something which Google doesn't allow on the app on Google Play anymore, like Adify and stuff like that all got pulled from Google Play. So I don't think Apple is going to let it become easy for this. What might happen is third-party apps which still use the old browser and not use the Safari kit, as they call it. I think that's what it's called, which has the actual Safari show up.
Yeah,
in
view, Safari View Controller or something
like
that.
Yeah, so the new one, their ads are not going to work on that anymore. But
yeah,
it's going to, like, I'm going to be interested to see how ad companies work around this, because it's a big loss.
So, like, I'm just glad that, you know, there's this focus on privacy in this release of the OS. And I'll pick one more small feature, which I really, really like, which is that now when you sign up inside apps, for example, you open Instagram and you enter your password, over there you can see iCloud keychain as a way to fill in your username and password. So I'm hoping that in the future, as Mike said, Apple first releases a feature for its own apps and then for third parties. So I'm hoping that in the future, you'll be able to use apps such as 1Password to be able to enter your password inside of apps, which currently you can't.
Yeah, it would be good, because now the developers need to add the support for 1Password themselves.
Yeah.
And if it's something which Apple just opens an API for, even other stuff like LastPass and whatever, KeePass and other stuff which people use, they'll all be able to do this, and it gives them more choices.
Yeah, so I remember seeing earlier, like 2-3 months ago, that 1Password is, you can like run it side by side with other apps and just drag your password from 1Password into the app that you want to sign into. So that's one way they're implementing it, but that'll be, you know, useful only on an iPad, right? On an iPhone, like,
I mean, not yet. Like, I'm pretty sure Apple is going to do some split view stuff on the iPhone eventually. It's going to come at some point, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty much been a disaster on Android as of now. Like, nobody who I know uses that thing on Android Oreo actually likes it.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if it'll come to the iPhone. Let's see if that happens. Maybe, you know, a year later we can have this discussion once again. So, yeah, I suppose that's all we have for this episode of Orbital. And we will see you with another episode next week. As always, you can go and rate us on iTunes if you like this podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, don't forget to write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. Thank you so much for listening.